Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. Thank you very much for joining me. Thanks for being part of my day. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'm glad you're here. Henry Hines is our guest, ladies and gentlemen. Henry has been with us before. He's an attorney in the law firm of Townsend and Townsend and Crew. He's also a chemical engineer, and he's a guy who's been working in the area of intellectual property for a number of decades. He's the author of a book called Patent Empowerment for Small Corporations. That's like yours and mine. He's also the author of the newer book called Patents for Business, and he's our friend. Henry, welcome back to the show.
Great. Hi, Jim. How are you?
Good doing to great. See you again. It's good to have you back on the show, as always. Remind us, I think I reported on this back earlier in the year, but remind us about something that happened in the Supreme Court this year that really kind of set a new edge. It created a new kind of an edge on acquiring a patent. It changed basically in a lot of ways the landscape, this Supreme Court ruling. Tell the audience about it.
Well, it certainly shook things up. It had quite an interesting effect. This was the KSR versus Teleflex case, and it was a simple case of whether or not an invention was patentable. It was a very simple combination of two known elements in an accelerator pedal for an automobile, whether it's a passenger car or a truck or whatever. And these elements had existed in previous patents, but individually.
Separate, and what the inventor did here was combine the two.
And that went up to the Supreme Court, and the question was whether or not that combination was obvious, and if it's obvious, of course, it's not patentable. So the Supreme Court took a good look at it. Arguments were made on both sides, and they decided it was obvious because of the context in which they were disclosed in the references, and that was a reasonable decision. But the reason it's got everybody all shaken up is that the Supreme Court then went a little bit beyond that, and as they often do, and made some general statements about the standards of patentability and said, you know, you've got to use common sense here and not just get stuck in the black letter law here and think about what you're doing, and does this really make sense to issue a patent on this?
So let me see if I got this straight. The patent. Let me see if this is a good analogy. Somebody invents the pneumatic tire, and somebody else invents a white wall, which, if folks, some of you may not remember, but there used to be a white wall that you installed on the tire that you put it on the rim, and they put a white wall on the tire. And somebody else then invented the white wall tire.
Well, that's an analogy. Yeah, that's a fairly good analogy.
And so your person...
These are actually two functional elements, two electronic elements that take part in the accelerator pedal, and they weren't right on top of each other. They're two separate elements, but they do work in conjunction when you put the two of them together. So,
and this guy combined those two and tried to patent it, and the Supreme Court said, not so fast.
Right. The reason was that they were doing the same things in combination that they were doing individually. Now, if they had worked in combination to get what we call a synergistic result or produce some kind of result that neither one could have produced individually, then they would have had a better chance. But that wasn't the case in this case. That's what we call the difference between obviousness and non-obviousness. An invention mm-hmm. has to be non-obvious. That's one of the sections in the patent statute mm-hmm. in order for the patent office to issue a patent on it. And there just wasn't enough there.
So it has to be, pardon the example, but it has to be a case where when someone looks at your invention, they don't go, well, duh.
That's right. That's essentially what the Supreme Court said, too, because they emphasized the phrase common sense, which, of course, we should all be using, you know, but sometimes attorneys get bogged down in legalisms, and common sense doesn't even enter the picture. But,
right. Well, how did this change things at the Patent Office?
Well, at the Patent Office, what they seem to be doing now, and attorneys are noticing this a lot, is they're much more wary about the patents that they're issuing. because the patent office actually had these references, but let the patent through anyway. So you're getting much closer scrutiny now, and I've
is that taking longer?
It takes a little bit longer.
At a time when we need to be speeding up patents, now this has come up.
Mostly what it's doing is examiners are being much more cautious because they don't want to get shot down by their supervisors or by the courts. So it's changing things a bit.
What does this mean for small business owners who want to patent something?
Well, what it really means to small business owners, individuals, and to anyone is that they have to sit down with their patent attorney and ask some hard questions as to what can we really develop here as an argument. We can't just it's not just enough to say, this is my invention, I put together A and B or A and B and C. You've got to say, what kinds of unusual discoveries did I make when I did this, and what can I say about the combination that makes the combination itself unique, other than just that it hasn't been done before? And there's plenty of room for that. I think if you actually sit down and think about these things, you can always come up with something.
Well, here's the practical business question in all this that's more likely for a small business owner to have to come up for them. They see the two devices. They believe there's a better way. They want to manufacture that better way. And so they say, okay, I'm going to develop this new better way, and I'm going to patent it.
They want to interest investors. They want to interest large corporations.
But what I was going to say, though, Henry, is so now if this comes up again, you might advise your client to license the combination of the other two just to manufacture it, right?
Well, that's another question of whether or not there's freedom to operate, because those two elements, or those three elements that you're combining, may themselves be covered by patents. And the interesting thing, of course, is that you can succeed in getting your own patent on the combination, but you may need to get a license under an existing patent on the individual components, because they may still be covered by patents.
Right.
That's an interesting question of dominating patents and freedom to operate. And you know, I've found, talking to managers and marketing people and inventors over the years, that the whole concept of not being able to practice your own invention, despite the fact that you have a patent on it, is something that they have a real difficult time grasping.
Mm-hmm.
Most people think they get a full sense of security just from getting their own patent coverage.
Exactly. Stand by, Henry. Henry Hines, ladies and gentlemen, is with our guest, and he and I will be right back after these messages. It's 20 after. When we come back, we're going to talk about due diligence, and this might be a little bit of a different twist than we've talked about before. Stay with us.
And the man steps right up to the microphone. Says it lasts just as the time bell rings.
Welcome back. It's 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and my websites are smallbusinessadvocate.com, which is where you can find the show, our simulcast on the internet, and the replay, the thousands of archives of past interviews, including the ones we're doing today, which will be up later in the day. Just the interview, no commercials, just all ready for you to listen to by streaming it over by MP3, or you can podcast them. We'll let you have fair use possession of our podcasts, of our interviews. And of course, you've got lots of articles that you can read there at the website. You can check out our Brain Trust members like Henry Hines, our guest this half hour. Don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter and check out my blog while you're there, which we update every weekday. And, of course, our other website, which is askjim.biz, so check that out. That's where you can get small business answers now. Henry and I are talking about the intellectual property landscape. And, Henry, one of the things that small business owners, you know, the small business owners who are listening right now might be saying, well, I'm not going to patent anything. I'm not an inventor, so why do I care about this? I know Blassingame tells me I have intellectual property and I create it all the time, but that's not really what's on my mind right now. I'm just going to continue to do business, and what Henry's talking about is not that important to me. But the truth is, Henry, is if you operate in the marketplace, you have opportunities to infringe on someone else's property every day, not only you, but your employees, right?
That's absolutely right, yeah. This is what I call the flip side of due diligence. We're talking about freedom to operate here. And many managers and technology people don't understand the fact that simply having your own patent doesn't insulate you from infringement liability to someone else. So that's a very important concept to understand, that you still have to worry about freedom to operate. And what do you do about that? And how do you find out whether or not you have freedom to operate? And if you do confront a patent that that might stand in the way, then what do you do about that?
Not only a patent, but maybe some kind of a trademark.
That's right. There are all kinds of things there. A trademark availability search has to be done. Patents, of course, are the biggest problem, since with trademarks you can search that and you can change your brand name. But changing your invention, changing your product line or your service is not quite so easy. That's something you need to be aware of early on.
Have you run into cases, Henry, over the years, very many, where somebody had invested quite a bit of time and resources into developing something only to learn that after they'd spent way too much time and money on this, only to learn that they weren't actually going to be able to take possession of ownership of that invention because someone else already had it or had part of it?
You know, this even happens in big pharma. In fact, last year, I think we talked about that. I think that was
the pharmacological companies. Yeah,
they already had a product on the market. That's after investing millions in development, not only the research, but going through all the regulatory procedures and all that, and then getting the product out to market, and then discovering that there was a dominating patent out there.
Mm-hmm.
So even the big guys make that mistake.
But when that happens to the big guys, they live to fight another day.
Them a hell of a lot of money too.
They write it down and they continue to march. Though maybe somebody gets fired, but for a small business, that could put us out of business.
That could wipe out the small business, absolutely. And the small businesses in particular will ultimately aspire to doing business with a large business, to getting into some kind of collaboration, because the small business can't handle the large-scale marketing and the large-scale manufacture and development. They need the collaboration with big business. And so that's why they're concerned about due diligence and freedom to operate, which is
part of due diligence. How do we conduct that kind of due diligence?
Well, what we want to do is how do you find out whether you have freedom to operate? And the question there is, how do you do a search, and how do you direct the search? Those are the key things. You need to understand that searches are done for different purposes. A patentability search to define whether an invention is actually a patentable invention is one thing, but to figure out whether or not it's infringing someone else's patent is something else. What you do is you talk to your patent attorney, and the patent attorney will work with professional searchers who will narrow it down to keywords. They'll know where to look. They'll know what to look for. They'll know what time frame to look in, that kind of thing. So setting that up is a relatively simple thing, but it takes doing. Aware of the issues.
I keep coming back, Henry, to the thing that most small business owners are more likely to get involved in, and that's the use of phrases and terms and trademarks any kind of a name or a tagline or anything like that. Small business owners are more likely to coin those type of things. And you need to know when you start using them, you start putting it on your letterhead, you start putting it in your advertising, if you have the ability to use those.
That's right. It's a simple enough thing to do, but it has to be done because you don't want to get into it, get the product out there, to get the communications out there, get the advertising out there,
right?
And then discover that you're using something that you're not legally empowered to use.
And you've already put a lot of money and commitment behind it. So that's one of the reasons it's a good thing to know a patent attorney, an intellectual property attorney like Henry Hines. Henry, the book is called Patents for Business, The Manager's Guide to Scope, Strategy, and Due Diligence. Tell us where it's available, please.
Well, it's available. Best place to find it is online, Amazon.com or Barnes & Noble. You can also see it on my own personal website,
HenryHines.com. HenryHines.com. Henry, thanks for being here. Good job today. We'll see you next time.
My pleasure.
Quick break. Right back with our good friend Bill Brandt after these messages. Stay with me.
Until it's gone, and I found out a little too late.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.